are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can only You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. It is Wednesday, hump day, got to get over the hump. But I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, could do, should do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you'll get it done anyway, because you always persevere. You never procrastinate. You always down for the cause. And that's why we love and respect you. Yes, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Click on podcasts. When you click on that, you'll see African Perspectives at the top and click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled for your information and listening. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad from 6 to 8. Followed by Let's Buy Black, 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. And on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Try to listen last night. It sounded good for a minute. Next thing I know, bam. But it's going to get together, believe me, and you'll listen to Dr. William Rogers next week, Tuesday, at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. And then on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not me. It is Sister POC and her program, Revive, on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And on Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from We Buy Black. The products that you see are produced by us. Go to WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans with my good friend, Brother Bomani Taihimba. And he is ready to take our people once again to Africa, like he has done for many years. He has taken many of our people to the motherland. His first trip upcoming is next month, April 3rd through the 13th, going to Senegal and Gambia for $3,300. Right after that, he's going to Ghana, Repatriation and Investment Tour, May 25th to June 5th, $3,700. After that is November 20th through the 30th, going to South Africa, Roots and Cultural Tour for $3,700. At the end of this year, December 24th
to January 5th, 2021, it's the Ghana Repatriation and Investment Tour once again for $3,700. Next year around this time, it'll be Senegal and Gambia once again for April 2nd through April 12th, 2021. And that's for $3,500. Brothers, just put an easy down payment down, $400. Continue to pay on it. Believe me, a trip of a lifetime. Africa for the Africans.org. Give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans.org. Dr. Renoko, my good brother, Dr. Renoko Rashidi, is going to be in the UK. He'll be in the UK later this month, at the end of the month. And he has a trip upcoming, of course, to Uganda and Rwanda, two beautiful places I'd like to go to, October 5th through the 16th. October 5th through the 16th, going to Uganda and Rwanda with Dr. Renoko. Also, too, he's going to Kemet at the end of the year, well, October 27th. He's turning right around, October 27th through November 4th, going to Kemet. Going to Kemet, and that trip is $4,200. I think both of them about $4,200. Check with Dr. Renoko Rashidi. Go online, Dr. DarUnnoko.com. Habesha. Habesha. Habesha means helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. And that's what this organization does. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha is a pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. The programs Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, and Golden Growers. All of these things that the brothers and sisters with Habesha has done. Also, too, they have the Kashi program, Invest in the Kashi Project. That is Dr. Kwaku Adua, and he was a dedicated, committed to research in ethnobotany and traditional medicine, and was dedicated to the country of Ghana. So in Ghana, the brothers and sisters are establishing the Kashi Village, and brothers and sisters, it is being done. Go to the website, go to Habesha. Incorporated.org, HABESHAINC.org, and see for yourself the work that these brothers and sisters are doing. It definitely deserves to be supported. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph Dibbitt Abernathy. Number to call is 404-549-8676. The store hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7. Sunday from 1 to 3. And they got it all. Believe me, they got furniture. They got clothing. They got artwork. They got figurines. And they got it all. They got the red, black, and green Nagash shoes. They got African Holocaust Museum. But more importantly, they have books. And if they don't have the book that you're requesting, believe me, they'll get it for you. They also have an African history program every Saturday. African history program, Know Thyself, every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. Baba Olatunji, outstanding instructor. But if you don't have time for that, but you like that information, you can also get the African History Club Multimedia Library. It is at this time 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. So give the shrine a call to find out what you have to do to access that at 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. That's right, 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. Sister Mama Nia does an outstanding job of providing books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, all kind of good stuff right there at her place. So check her out. If she doesn't have the book that you were requesting, believe me, she'll get it. As well as this brother, Kazimde Ajama, with Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. You know why? Because there is light in the Black Dot. For sure. Akabin Institute. Akabin Institute. Brother Bamani, excuse me, Brother Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti have been doing an outstanding job of educating our young warriors, and they definitely deserve to, needed to be supported. Akabin Institute, K-A-K-O-B-E-N. Make your check out to Akabin Institute. P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App and PayPal, the dollar sign, YYAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, Akabin Institute. Sister Gabby Arilla, in Haiti, in the rural portion of Haiti. She's in the north eastern portion of Haiti. And Sister Gabby deserves to be supported, the work that she's doing. Please go online to sonjay-haiti.org. 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 And please, brothers and sisters, go online, check it out, and give support, because it's definitely necessary. It's definitely needed. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Our conference is this weekend at the Interdenominational Theological Center on the campus of Morris Brown University or the Atlanta University System campus on MLK. The Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night at 9 p.m. every Thursday night. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. The Thursday night broadcast of Us Lifting Us. And I know we'll be laying out all of the good details about tomorrow. And I'm going to do that on this program today, because Baba Akima will be my guest very shortly. And we'll talk about all the things that we are preparing for Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I tell you, sometimes when I turn to the Inye Sesim, either I'm going to talk about a particular topic, and bam, there it is, the ancestors. The ancestors. I love them. March 10th. Powerlessness breeds a race of beggars. I repeat, powerlessness breeds a race of beggars. Kwame Ture, formerly Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, and Charles V. Hamilton. Most Africans in Western society assume that integration is a two-way process of equal give and take. After all our hard lessons, the melting pot delusion is still alive and well in our community. Too many of us also assume that so-called integration is a positive that we should aspire to. However, integration is not what has happened. What Africans and African culturalism that Europeans have allowed to be absorbed into their culture has assumed a lesser or subordinate importance and status. Therefore, in using the word integration, we may be using the correct dictionary denunciation, but it is not the correct connotation for Africans in the Western reality. Instead, we need a term that more appropriately fits this reality. Sub-integration would be more accurate description because it is a term that includes not only the basic ideal definition of integration, but it also includes the way in which Africans and our cultural aspects are introduced and incorporated into and recognized by Western culture and society. Be mindful here that we are not speaking of those ancient and traditional African ideas and technology that were stolen and distorted into the foundations of European thought and behavior, because those Africanisms are not accepted or admitted as African within a European culture, thought, or society. And you know, I've mentioned that many times before. In fact, I'd say it was forced assimilation imposed on us. Affirm, I do not strive to be integrated into that which is inferior. Affirm, I do not strive to be integrated into that which is inferior. March 11th, our work has only begun. Our culture, our race must strike the blow if they would be free. Ida B. Wells. We are at war. We have been at war with Europeans and other aggressors against our children and selves, ancestors, and spirit for over 4,000 years. And since the battle is still raging, we must defend our children by preparing them to fight with the will and commitment of those Africans who enter the battlefield to engage our enemies from the start. War is waged on every institutional front. We battle our enemies spiritually, intellectually, economically, politically, and in the home. No institution has monopoly on the battlefield for the sanity and physical safety of our people. Knowing this, and knowing that out of misdirected thought and fear of retaliation, we have consistently placed every institution before that of the military. We need to recognize the military's role in our liberation. The military side of our relationship with others who have standing armies, which they are readily used in maneuvers against us, should never be subjugated to a drive to attain peace at any cost. We must build our armies and prepare our children to man them. We must prepare them not for the slave mentality that fears death for any reason, but for the liberator mentality, which willingly sacrifices its physical existence to ensure the geopolitical, economic, and cultural solvency of the seventh generation after them. A powerful and dedicated military is a necessary institution and instrument to this end. Ashe. Affirm, I am preparing our children for the front lines. Affirm, I am preparing our children for the front lines. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesem. Kwame Nkrumah, I read this many times because I talk about how important it is for us as African people to respect and understand that we are one African. We are one. We are one people. That's why I always use the word African as the noun. And there's a word that goes in front of the African. Africa is a suffix. Africa is a suffix, is a noun, a person, place, or thing. Africa, Africans. The word that goes in front of it is the adjective, what is being described. What describes that noun? We are here in America. We are American Africans. We're not black. We're not black. We're not Negroes, coloreds, niggas. We ain't none of that. We're Africans. We are American Africans. Caribbean Africans. We're in the Caribbean. If you're Jamaican Africans, Puerto Rican Africans, Trinidadian Africans, Barbadian Africans. If we're in Central America, we're Central American Africans or Honduras Africans, Mexican Africans. You get the picture. South Africa. In South America, we are Colombian Africans, Venezuelan Africans, Brazilian Africans. In Europe, we're British Africans, French Africans. We're Africans. We are African people. We're Nigerian Africans, Cameroonian Africans, Ghanaian Africans, Senegalese Africans. We're Africans. Kwame Nkrumah, in his speech of freedom in 1961, I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not just as another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on the hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. 1961. A few years later, before he was deposed as in a coup, he said, if we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose,
this call is being recorded,
we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we have suffered heretofore. Lord knows he was right. Lord knows he was right. Brothers, we are one Africa. One. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect the European has had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from the European's thoughts so to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered worldview because we are African, and because the future which Europe leads us is genocide. Reject everything the European says and does. Reject it. Once again, I'm going to read this piece from Lester Velt Milton and Brother Lester Velt Milton, great interviewers. You can go to YouTube and listen to some of these interviews with some of our great minds. Our great African-centered minds, Dr. A.C. Hilliard, Dr. Ivan von Cernima, Dr. Ben, so many others. He says, we must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so we lay at your feet the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's trowel and square, African books of wisdom. Now go and build for eternity. That is our quest, my brothers and sisters. That is what we must do as African people, to do for ourselves. Once again, this is African Perspectives. We're talking today about us lifting us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family economics. And we have our founder and our chairman emeritus, I like to say, Brother Baba Akima. Baba Akima, good morning.
Good morning to you, brother.
How are you this morning?
Fired up now and listening to your voice.
Well, that's good, because I'm fired up thinking about this weekend. I know we have a very pivotal weekend for us as an organization, so we can clearly move in the direction that we know that us lifting us should go in to be a viable entity for the freedom of African people. Because, only a fool would think that this kind of system that we're in would be a liberating force for us as a people. We're in capitalism. Capitalism is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. It's very predatory. It doesn't speak for African liberation. It doesn't even speak for us being integrated to this system. So, we are providing a viable real alternative. So.
A shame.
So tell us about what's going to be happening this weekend. In fact, what's going to happen Friday? We have a meet and greet Friday. I know the last few years we were fortunate and blessed enough to meet and greet at Cafe Ulu, but that's unfortunate now. So what's going to be happening?
Well, as some of us know, each year in March, US Lift and US Economic Development Cooperative, LLC, brings its members together for a convention and a members meeting. The main thing that happens, of course, is the election of our board of directors. And it's a three-day event. And so far, it's always happened here in Atlanta. Hopefully, at some point, it won't be in Atlanta. It'll move around. But it's a three-day event, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Friday event is an evening event starting at 6, and it's a social, a meet and greet, where brothers and sisters who have seen each other's name in print or may have heard the voice on a conference call or a webinar, they'll get a chance to actually embrace each other and converse and get to know each other. All 3 days, the events are at ITC, the Interdenominational Theological Center in the AU complex. Saturday and Sunday is all day, starting at 9 o'clock in the morning and ending about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The meet and greet event that this coming Friday is open to the public, and we hope that any brothers and sisters who are listening to this broadcast and who will be in Atlanta, and if you can clear some space in your calendar and in your schedule, come on over to ITC and fellowship with us. So again, meet and greet. We'll have food, entertainment. But for the most part, we'll have fellowship. So that's this Friday, the 13th, at ITC. In the for those of you who are familiar with ITC, when you go in the gate, in the parking lot is there. The first building in front of you is the conference center, and so the events Friday will be in the conference center. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, it's a closed event for members only, and that will be in the Franklin Auditorium. We'll be in an auditorium, and then we have 3 classrooms where we'll do some breakout work. So that's this weekend, and we have people coming from around the country and possibly from around the world. I know one of our board members who lives in London, he can't come because of the...
Because of the virus?
The virus, yeah.
Oh, wow.
His company will not allow any of its employees to travel out of the UK.
Oh.
So he couldn't come. That's Brother Madike, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of anyone else who's coming from out of the country, but this whole virus is, you know, is more than a notion. And so it impacts almost every family in a very direct way. And so for the Ulu family, it stopped one of our board members from coming.
And yeah.
So hopefully it doesn't scare off anybody else.
Wow.
So, but the work of Ulu, of course, is, as you indicated, is building, you know. What are the tools that African people need to navigate this world? And in the economic arena, we know that we have our individual businesses. We have some business associations. We have the Black chambers of commerce around the country. In cities, we have business associations, maybe for a smaller district or a business district in our local communities. But by and large, the only real movement is entrepreneurship and individually owned businesses. Some of them are corporations and may involve smaller groups. But it's essentially us doing commerce individually, essentially by ourselves, and no central coordination, no sense of how do we look at the economic activity in our community and put a steering wheel or a steering mechanism or a rudder on it so we are predictably going in a prescribed direction. So we think the necessity is to add to what we're already doing a group-owned tool, a group-owned economic platform, infrastructure, so that for those of us who are already in business for ourselves, who looking for a platform to connect our energies. One of the things I was reminded of several years ago, well, I use this example, and I don't think it's true in Atlanta, but I know in Milwaukee at one point, and you and I share those roots.
That's right.
There was a black wholesaler to the mom-and-pop stores.
Yeah.
And so you couldn't get everything through that wholesaler. But I don't think there's a black wholesaler in Atlanta that services the small corner groceries. When we had more corner groceries up there than you have here.
Mm-hmm.
But there is always the need. Sometimes it doesn't interface with the public, but it's business to business, the connections. I know in Atlanta, if you sit around some of your Jamaican restaurants long enough, you'll see suppliers that are Jamaicans coming to drop off supplies. Mm-hmm. And so they are developing an infrastructure where they're not just retailing their
right.
product and their services. They're also building infrastructure in terms of supply to the restaurants. So Ulu is an effort that looks at what other areas of economic activity can we build in and make a difference. And there's a prescription that we have. Essentially, is we set up a mechanism to mm-hmm. aggregate our resources, our talent, our skills, our labor, and our financial resources. And then we structure those resources that we aggregate to mm-hmm. build and run secondary co-ops that provide a needed good or service, that create jobs, and that also hopefully produce a profit so that we're continuing to build the base. And then those businesses that we build also are attached to nonprofits in the community. So we build a permanent funding sources for some of the things that we want to do that do not generate economics or do not generate a surplus on their own. In particular, we want to support our African-centered schools
right.
and other programs that are around our youth. But that's some of what we intend to do, have done, or doing. But this weekend is the annual meeting and convention.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you're going to be there and bless us with the energy that you.
Well, I'll try. Believe me, I'll try. I know there's a lot of folks that bring a lot of energy to our conference. Sister Ikeena and what she brings, and Sister Nanana, Brother Thurman, all of us, man, we're enthusiastic about what Ulu is all about, and I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it. I know that when I was still in Milwaukee, I joined up. I was thinking like about the 70th or 80th person. Now we are over, are we close to 600 now, almost over 600?
Over
600.
Right.
Yeah, at 600 people who are.
And that's a small number.
It really is. Yeah.
Once the base is built and we're firing on all cylinders, we've built a structure that can accommodate hundreds of thousands of members.
Right.
And members are not just members like in a typical organization. Members in this formation are actually partners and owners in a company. And not only can we benefit the community, but there's also a way for members to receive a direct benefit from the success of the overall operation. But yeah, the vision is that we will be in the thousands, tens of thousands, at a point of hundreds of thousands of members who are not only individuals, but institutions. A church can be a member. Mm-hmm. A barbershop can be a member. So as long as it's a legal entity, it can be a member. So into the hundreds of thousands of members, but also into the hundreds and thousands of businesses and institutions that we own and run. So the vision is grand because the need is grand.
Mm-hmm.
We're not gonna move the needle thinking ma and pop and building ma and pop. We're gonna have to build international, global institutions that connect our people and that provide a pathway for energy and resources to move from one community to another. Mm-hmm. And so that's the vision. And it just follows up from the grand visions of our ancestors, you know, and those that have come before us.
Are there any models that are operating at this present time in the world that we can look to? Because when you know, our people are so, I hate to say it, scared when you talk about cooperative economics, some kind of democratic socialism, because you've been so ingrained with capitalism and the belief in capitalism. That's why in this society, even though they know there should be redistribution of wealth, should no 1% or 10% of a group have all of the damn wealth at the expense of 80-90% of the people? That's crazy, you know? But even Caucasians don't want redistribution of wealth because they too believe that somehow they can join that 10 or 1% by hitting the lottery or hitting the jackpot or inheritance or lawsuit, you know.
Or a lawsuit. Okay.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
See?
Yes,
so,
indeed.
So, you know, the reality is for us, what they do, I don't give a damn, but for us as African people, we need this kind of concept. So because what it can do, it can support us. It can provide employment for us. It can do so many things. We can build the school. We can do everything we can because we're working together.
Exactly.
You know?
And there are models. Of course, you know, in terms of American Africans, and I'm learning that from, that term from you.
Thank you.
But if we reflect on our history in this part of the world, one of the first things we did after quote unquote emancipation was to form mutual aid societies. Mm-hmm. They were burial societies, they were insurance societies, but we knew that even though I came from this plantation and you came from another plantation, after emancipation, we knew that we had to establish community, that no matter what plantation we came off of, we needed each other. So we naturally formed mutual aid societies. And even before emancipation, we were already creating cooperatives. One of the things that, and I've sent email blast out about this particular thing, and if brothers and sisters would Google the Market Women of Charleston.
The Market Women of Charleston. Charleston, South Carolina? Okay.
In Charleston, South Carolina, during the enslavement period, the plantations in and around Charleston would send women, black women, into the market probably on Saturdays or Fridays and Saturdays or whatever, and they would go to the market with something that was produced on the plantation. And they were to sell it and to get provisions and bring them back to the plantation. But the market women, African women, would do something a little different. They would go, let's say they took eggs to the market, they would trade eggs for something, and they would do several trades before they got to purchasing what was needed for the plantation, but they would have made money in the transaction for themselves.
Oh, wow.
And what happened is that the market women from different plantations formed a cartel.
Mm-hmm.
They came together and they perfected their craft such that at a point they controlled the marketplace as African women, still in enslavement.
Mm. Wow.
The plantation owners found out about it, and so they allowed it to persist for a good while. They just got their cut.
Right.
In other words,
right.
So we're going to allow this to go on, but you just give me my cut.
Mm-hmm.
But the vendors in the marketplace, they were really outmaneuvered. And so at a point, they were able to get the government in Charleston and the police forces to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look that up, they actually controlled the marketplace, the commerce that took place on the floor of one of the most vibrant marketplaces in America, was controlled by African women while they were still enslaved. So that's been the instinct in us anyway, to come together and to organize ourselves so that from an economic or commercial or trade perspective, we sought advantage, and we, in some cases, we saw advantage and benefited from that. But not only that, the cooperative movement among African people in America is old. Some co-ops existed before emancipation, and certainly many of them existed after emancipation. And some of them were associated with the civil rights movement. Fannie Lou Hamer, of course, because of her political activity, was fired from whatever job she had. But then she hooked on to a co-op for support. And but it's chronicled in a book that one of our good sisters in our cooperative movement penned. The name of the book is Collective Courage, and the author is Jessica Gordon Nimbart. But if you Google Collective Courage, you'll see. And what she does in her book, she chronicles the co-op movement from before emancipation till today.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, here in the Atlanta metropolitan area, in East Point, Georgia, is the headquarters for the Federation of Southern Cooperatives.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's on it's on East Point Street.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think it's on East Point Street. Yeah, but right behind City Hall, and the co-ops, the farmer co-ops, the producer co-ops, the credit unions, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, you know, Mississippi, parts of Arkansas, there are any number of co-ops in that area. And the Federation provides services to all of, in other words, the Federation of Southern Cooperatives is a membership organization, and the members are all co-ops, black co-ops. And so that's a rich history. And of course, the Federation was the leading institution that supported the Pickford resolution or whatever it was called. You know, the black farmers sued the American government and was rewarded because they discriminated against black farmers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they gave subsidies to the white farmers, but they wouldn't give equal subsidies to the black farmers. And so they navigated that legal case. But in the world, co-ops are big.
Right.
Italy is the seedbed for a lot of it. Well, it's got started in England, they say. But, of course, you know, nothing got started in England.
That's right.
You know, England, we had cooperatives.
For sure.
You know, in indigenous communities all over the place. As a matter of fact, until very recently, we didn't even understand the concept of private ownership of land.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
you know,
that's only just becoming to be in vogue. But Italy, Spain, the UK, Canada, there's a very progressive co-op in Cleveland called Evergreen, and people can look that up. But the model that comes closest to giving an example of what we can do as African people is the model in Spain, in northern Spain, right in the Pyrenees Mountains bordering France, and it's called Mondragon. M-O-N-D-R-A-G-O-N. You say Mondragon, so Mondragon. And this was a co-op that started in 1956 with six people, a Catholic priest and five or six students, and just continued to build and grow and build and grow until today they employ right at 100,000 of their own people and paying jobs with benefits. They are the largest supermarket chain in their part of the world, manufacturing and assembling plants.
What did they start out doing? What was their main?
They started out producing a small heater to heat a room in a house, a paraffin heater. So these were students of an engineering school. So they were tinkerers and had a history of building things. And so when they started out manufacturing the small heaters that they marketed to people in the community. And they just built on that. Early in their development, they created a bank. That's, they have many branches. You know, they're one of the bigger banks in their region of the country. It's a co-op bank. So, but they started as the producers of a product to warm a portion of your house. It wasn't even big enough to warm your whole house, just a portion of your house. Mm-hmm. And now they produce washing machines, stoves, refrigerators, parts for cars, parts for airplanes, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but they also, as I indicated, they own the largest supermarket chain. They own their own banks, insurance company, research laboratory, housing complexes, nurseries. They also own their own university. But from a cultural standpoint, at a point they were persecuted, and they were nicknamed the niggers of Spain, and isolated and persecuted, and they have a separatist streak in them as a community. But they also have a separate language called Basque, the Basque language. That's not Spanish. But they were persecuted so heavily, they had to go underground to keep their language alive. Because okay. Spain didn't allow them. They tried to kill their tongue, their mother tongue. So they had to go underground, teach the Basque language in secret. They teach their language now in their own nurseries and in their own universities.
Beautiful.
So from a cultural standpoint, they were able to keep alive a part of their culture because of their economic success. Mm-hmm. See, what would it mean if African-centered schools had a permanent funding source based off of taxing our commercial activity?
Right.
You know, and maybe not only that, but what if our elders in the African-centered community had a secure community that they could retire in that's funded by us taxing the commercial activity that takes place in our community? Right now it's being taxed by entities and it ends up with the 1%.
That's right.
And you don't have a choice. You know, you put a gun to your head, you pay these taxes, or else
we'll throw you in jail.
Yeah. Man. But so our system essentially places self-interest in the flow of commerce and siphons off a little of it in the way of surplus or profit to things that we want to dedicate them to, including a direct return or a dividend, so to speak, to members of ULU who qualify for those dividends.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to take a break. We come up on that time. When we come back from the break, we're going to have more discussion with Baba Akima, talking about ULU. We're going to talk about the 10-point program. I always mention the ULU Thursday night broadcast, which I know will be very live tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk at 929-477-2789. And other issues that we're going to talk about, and of course, some highlights of this weekend's activities. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Friday at 8 p.m. If it's 8 p.m. and it's Friday, you know it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, once again, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today with Brother Baba Akima with Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. We have our conference coming up this weekend. It begins this Friday at the Theological Institute. We're having a reception on the AU campus. And that reception is open to the public. It's free and open to the public. And then Saturday begins our work. We have a full itinerary. Baba Akima, you're going to have us working, aren't you? You got to be have a full itinerary, brother.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of work to be done.
Yes, so, it is.
Yeah, the main thing, of course, is to focus, you know, on the work and mm-hmm. make sure that we format it so that we don't get choked, right? We want it to go down smooth. So a lot of the work is making sure that our attention is focused where it needs to be.
Right.
And, of course, we, as you mentioned earlier, for the last 2 years, we were heavily involved in incubating a small business that was a model, Cafe Ulu, and of course we had to pull the plug on that, and so we're still wrapping up loose ends associated with that and you know, reestablishing firm footing so we can identify and fund the next project. Mm-hmm. And of course we'll, in the coming days and weeks, we'll be pulling the energy in Atlanta back together, because we have our largest base of membership is here in the Atlanta metropolitan area. We've probably got close to 200 members here in Atlanta. And so we want to pull that family back together and and do whatever grieving we have to do, and and know that it's about something very big. And, you know, when you look at the history of anything of significance, there were many opportunities for lessons learned. And so that's what we count our experience with Cafe Ulu as, is we say to, and it's an African proverb. I didn't know that this proverb was African until I started using it for an explanation of what happened to Cafe Ulu. The old saying that to stumble is not to fall, but to go forward faster.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an African proverb.
Yeah.
You know, and it seeped its way into culture of, you know, of every people, but that's our wisdom. And so the experience with Cafe Ulu is really teaching and the seedbed of many lessons, fundamental lessons. The convention this weekend is, again, every year. This is the seventh convention, and very significant. And the year 2020 is significant for us as well. Mm-hmm. We've set some some hefty goals for this year and beyond. And so we'll focus on some of those this weekend.
That's great. And I'm honored to be a part of it and to be a member for the length of time that I have been and will continue to be a member, continue to.
Let me ask this question. Because one of the things that we sometimes overlook, if we ask the question of our people, just found a way to just to blanket our people with this question, do you think we should control the economics of our community? In other words, to ask young brothers and sisters, middle-aged brothers and sisters, elder brothers and sisters, do you think we should control the economics of our community? More than half of our people would emphatically say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then if you ask them a second question, do you have a good sense of how that could be done? Many of them do not, and they would admit to you that they do not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask the third question, if there was a credible program that accomplished that goal of us controlling the economics of our community, would you want to know about it? They would want to know about it.
Yes.
So the urgency or the need or the desire for us to control the economics of our community is already in our people. You don't have to teach that. You don't mm-hmm. even have to. In other words, it's already there. It may be dormant for the most part, but it's in our bones, it's in our DNA, and it's in the DNA of everybody who self-identifies as a community or people or nation. They want to control the economic activities of their community. So ULU taps into what already is, mm-hmm. that urge, that need, that recognition. And so even though ULU itself is a new formation, it's not tapping into, it's not having to create the urge and then build on it. The urge is already there. The need is already there. The recognition is already there. We just come with a particular prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to teach our prescription based on already a well-established and agreed upon need or desire in our people. I just wanted to mention that.
It's important. I mean, because it is there. You know, because
yes,
I mean, you're right. Because if you ask anybody that, you know, and they'll say yes, you know, and even though they may not have the answer to do it, but we do, but we do,
exactly.
We have it, and then the question becomes, would you want to be a part of it? And to me, the $50 membership fee is so minimal, it's ridiculous, you know.
Exactly.
But even the $1,000 share. Is not that much when you consider the economics of this time for us to develop the things that we talk about developing. You know, I mean, when I first found out about ULU, in Milwaukee, talking with Baba Tony Courtney and a few others, and then, of course, I came to Atlanta and got a lot of information, talking with you, came to your home, talked with you, went back to Milwaukee, shared that information. You know, we talked about opening up a ULU mall, ULU mart, where everything in that place would be owned and operated by the co-op. The people who worked there owned and operated by the co-op. Even the people who shopped there who got benefits because they were co-op members, but we sold to the general community. So if you weren't a member, you may pay a little bit more, but you always had the opportunity to become a member, you know,
yeah.
if you were
yeah.
if you were us, if you were African,
yeah.
you know. So,
and that model is still alive. That's still our lead model. Mm-hmm. And it also accommodated persons and businesses who may not be owned by ULU to have space in the marketplace as well. The marketplace would encompass things like a farmer's market, later to become a full service food outlet,
mm-hmm.
A large consignment component. A weekly auction, a theater, movie theater / entertainment hall,
mm-hmm.
maybe two of those, office space for rent, space for healers to do their practice. But the larger space would be divided into stores, kiosks, individual spaces for entrepreneurs to set up where maybe they couldn't afford to set up and be independent in the community, but they could afford there. And even tabletop space where a middle schooler or a high schooler could start their entrepreneurial pursuits and grow it into something that they would be big enough that they would have to leave the space. And so it's a cultural, educational, commerce space, business incubator. So it's a lot of different things under a big box roof. And so that's still our primary model.
And believe me, I'm hoping, pray that it will come to fruition a lot sooner, you know, than later, because it's so desperately needed, you know. We also have a 10-point program, and I'm going to go over part. Well, we have a caller. Caller 447. 447. Oh, maybe they just want to listen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's always permissible. So we have a 10-point program, current events and general unrest of the times.
Sorry about that, Brother Okima.
Oh, okay. All right. Hey, this is Brother Baba Okima. This is Brother Paul from the UK, calling from the UK.
What's Paul?
Yes, good
hey,
morning
brother.
To you, Brother Okima. Good morning to you, the guest.
How you doing? Really? How you doing, Paul?
Oh, fantastic, Brother Ochi. Fantastic. Even better to hear you on these airwaves.
Thank you so much.
But I'd just like to make a small interjection. I'm listening to your guests with keen interest and just listening to how he defines, how he says he sees the difference between how the Jamaicans are operating and what he feels needs to be done. But I've been the last week. I've been working in the library and working on some things in and the library is situated on a main road, High Street, and opposite me is a three-store Pakistani operated groceries. Mm. And I've been observing it while I'm sitting here. Yeah, and in the week I've been here, I have not seen one Asian person go into that shop. Every person who frequents that shop, almost every person, is of African descent. Now, there's something wrong with that picture. Now, two doors away from that is a fishmonger shop, another Pakistani shop, and the majority of customers who frequent them are Africans. Now, you know, I have to really wonder, you know, these people, they don't frequent African shops, Asians, they don't. So at the end of the day, nobody is forcing Africans to go into these businesses. Nobody's tying their hands. Nobody's miseducating them. It's their choice. So, you know, I'm asking what really is wrong with that picture? Because at the end of the day, we see the same patterns in where you are in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, in all throughout our community, I never forget, in 1980, I was at the NAACP convention, and a brother from Philadelphia was on the convention floor at the plenary session. That's when everybody comes together. And this brother was literally in tears talking about the transformation that was happening within his community with these Arabs coming into his community, taking the stores that we got basically from the previous people, either i.e. Germans or European Jews or whoever. But we once had them, and now, you know, Arabs had them or Indians had them, Indians from India and so forth had them. And yet they don't do anything. They don't employ our people. They don't give back to our people. You know, they're there and those stores make money for them, and then they're able to bring more people over. They're also able to live outside of the community, because first they got the store. They may live upstairs from the store or whatever, but then they accumulate the wealth, and they move out and they maintain that store and build another one and so forth. And yet we continue to purchase from them. I think the bottom line is that we need to say to our people, let us come together. This is what Ulu is about. Let us come together, pull our monies together, get our own store to employ our people, employ our children, give them a first opportunity for a job, you know? And if we're not going to their stores, what's going to happen? They're going to have to close down or sell it back to us.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the things that I think we're not being, we're not being real in this sense. Power in any arena is exercised through three measures: instruction, reward, and punishment. Now, Oshi, this is an example you're familiar with. During the demonstrations in Milwaukee, there was a time when they had Black Christmas, mm-hmm. and the Black community was instructed not to go
right
to Wisconsin Avenue to shop.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody went,
mm-hmm.
because they knew they were going to get their butt spanked if they did. There was going to be a price to pay if you violated the code. And so in our community, we got to get to the place where we build the alternative, give people a chance to buy into and become a stakeholder in the alternative. But then you have to also say to them that if you violate, in other words, you're an owner of part of the economics of your own community, and if you violate that, there's going to be a price to pay. Because in the Asian communities, it's not just that they want to shop with their people. There's a price to pay if you violate the norms.
Mm-hmm.
And we sometimes don't understand and don't build into the equation the ability to castigate. I mean, sometimes it's just, you know, well, another good example happened here in Atlanta. There's a store here in Atlanta called Fruits, Veggies, and Herbs. It's located near where Oshi lives. The owner started in a fruit stand or vegetable stand on the corner, not far from where it is now. My wife taught in a elementary school near there. She was in a grocery store, and one of her coworkers saw her purchasing greens in that store. And that coworker came up to her and said, "Sister, why are you buying those greens in here when there's a brother selling greens out on the corner?" She put those greens back, went and bought from that brother, and she's never stopped buying from that brother again. But there was somebody in the community that spoke up.
Right.
Said, "You're violating the law. There's a brother on the corner with greens, and you're going to come here and buy your greens from a European establishment?" And that community member basically waved her fingers like Big Mama would wave her fingers and say, "You out of order." So
right.
That has to be a part of the equation as well.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't depend on people doing things from a positive motivation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to have to know that there's consequences due to be paid if you don't do what is the code.
And that code,
I just wanted to bring that up.
Right. Well, and also, too, that kind of code must be firmly established. We all must know it, because a lot of times, because we get our information, you know, through the internet, through television mostly, and, mm-hmm. and commercial radio. And of course, commercial radio is just that. They got to pay for it. So those commercials, they may not broadcast something about, you know, this brother's particular establishment and what it's going to do and how it's going to benefit our community. You know,
yeah.
They might be talking about, you know, the supermarkets that they have here that pay the radio stations a lot of money for them to broadcast what they want and the yeah. sales and things that they want. See, and so when we get in our information that way, just like to me, I haven't seen a community newspaper, you know, here, unless I'm just missing it, you know, that talks about the things that are going on with us as a people here in Atlanta. I must be missing it because I'm looking for it. I always get community newspapers. I know the newspaper back at home, the Milwaukee Community Journal, the Milwaukee Courier, the Milwaukee Star, three newspapers. Obviously, you know, a lot of them have the same kind of features and go after the same kind of advertising dollars, but at least these entities will talk about what is going on in the American African community in the city. And I don't see that, you know.
Yeah, I would say to Brother Paul, that's you know, that we do have to pay attention to that pattern. And it happens everywhere in the African world. Somebody else sets up shop in our community and we just flock to them. And, we have to change that habit pattern.
And the same thing, it happens on the continent. You know, but we can't go anywhere and set up shop in their community. Mm-mm. We can't do it. But they can easily come to our community, set up shop. You know, there was an incident that happened in Milwaukee. Actually, it was in Cudahy, suburb of Milwaukee, a few years ago, where a Caucasian, just because these people wore turbans, he thought they were, you know, Arabs, but they were Indians. They were Sikh, and they had built a beautiful Sikh temple, and he defiled the temple. He went in there and shot a number of people and so forth. And of course, it's national news. And you know, the question I asked myself is, how did they, you know, come to build such a beautiful temple? Well, this is part of a consortium they had. Of service stations and convenience stores and so forth throughout the city of Milwaukee, all of them within our community, and then later being able to branch outside of that because they had made so much money that they built this temple. They literally built this temple on the financial backing of our community.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is they don't provide anything in terms of any kind of reciprocity, any kind of return saying, hey, we have made all this money. We want to provide a scholarship that you can give to some children in your community for what you have allowed us to be able to do. There's no, you know, giving back. It's just about take. And then if there is, it's a challenge. Because I remember there, the beauty salon stores, which are operated by them, although fortunately here in the city of Atlanta, there are some beauty supply companies that are owned and operated by us. But in a lot of cities, there aren't. There are none. And
right.
and yet there's disrespect shown to our people. And so at one of them, there was some disrespect shown, and we marched on them. We demonstrated. And ironically, there were some of us waiting, you know, once our demonstration was over, so they could go in and save 50 cents to a dollar on some weave, you know, to not support the demonstration, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And that's the kind of mentality that we have because we live in a society that perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. What's in it for me? How can I get over? And see, what we're proposing with Us Lifting Us is a cooperative mindset. It's not about you. It's about us. And how can we come together to build for each other and with each other, have the respect, the trust to make it happen for ourselves?
I see.
Brother Paul, you still with us?
Yes, Balochi. Yeah, you know, but Balochi, but what I'm saying is that, you know, listening to this conversation, and I know you're specifically talking about African-Americans in specific regions of America.
No, well, all over. You know, yeah, Ulu has members in the UK as well.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that. We'd have to get more familiar with it. But what I'm saying is, like you rightfully says, it's what I find stomach-wrenchingly painful is that at some point, do we have to ask ourselves the question, what is wrong with some of us? I mean, what is it that we can't see? You know, I mean, like I said to you, I've been here this week and doing some work and observing this store, and it's just constantly packed with Black African people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, does none of them see nothing wrong with that picture? I mean, what, you know, and you're right, this is not just in your location, this is all over. I mean, in 2020, can we not see the light? What is wrong? I mean, how long? I mean, how much education do you need to work out that if you spend money with others and constantly put money in other people's pocket, then you're going to stay below? How much intelligence does it need to work that out?
Yeah. Brother Paul, you know, you're right. It's all over. And I think the responsibility to change it falls with you, myself, and Oshie, and brothers and sisters of like mind and spirit. We not only have to continue to educate our families and people who are in communities with us, but we have to build the alternative. In other words, pull our resources together and build the fish market that is ours, small at first, and then do what's necessary to grow it, and at the same time find ways to spank the hand of our family members who would drop their dollars in other places. Because if we don't find a way to embarrass them, to punish them, to castigate them, and at the same time satisfy their needs with institutions that we run, then I don't see a way for us to win. But the mistake we cannot make the mistake of thinking that our group thinking is going to turn around and there'll be another reality. We have to create and grow the alternative that we want. And it's those of us like yourself, Oshie, myself, and others who are listening, we have to incubate the alternative and equip it with the ability to attract our people, to allure our people. And again, you know, there's almost no creature that's ever come into existence that didn't have the ability to defend itself by letting other folk know that there's a price to pay if you violate my space, so to speak. But anyway, I guess the thing that I'm saying is that the onus is on the aware ones to create the tools necessary. This is an example, and I know it's an asinine example. It's almost a ridiculous example, but it makes the point. If we say that we want to go into the forest and we want to cut down all the trees, and we go into the forest with a pocket knife, and at a point our pocket knife just falls apart because, you know, it's not fit for the job, we can't blame the trees. So if we say that our people are backwards and our thinking is backwards, and we recognize that, and then the tool that we develop is a pamphlet or a whimper to say that you're wrong. And then when we apply that, and if it doesn't work, we still blame the people. We really got to get to the point where we blame and give adequate attention to the tools that we create, the aware ones, to attack the problem. We've got to produce, you know, the samurai sword or the African shield, it's not built on the battlefield. It's built ahead of the battle. Mm-hmm. And if it goes to the battlefield and if it doesn't work, you gotta build a better one.
That's right.
And so those of us who, quote unquote, are the aware ones are sometimes engaging in the struggle on behalf of our people with inferior tools. And that hurts, of course, when you say it, but I think empirically it's the truth.
We have another caller, 6267. 267.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I want to say good afternoon to your guests.
Hey, Ralph. How are you doing, Ralph? How have you been?
I'm fine.
Good.
I can't complain.
Good.
I've been listening when I can. But I'm listening to your guests, and they're from the Ulu, from Ulu, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, and I heard what you were saying, brother, about, you know, we got to set an example, and that's, I'm 100% in agreement with that. We have people right now, going around saying separation is the key, you know, and they come from an organization, but yet none of them are separated. And they've been saying this, and it sounds great, but they've been saying this for over 50, well, it had to be 50, 60 years because I'm in my 60s now, and I've been hearing it all my life. Now, with the ULO organization, I remember I talked to one of the brothers that was heading it years ago. And I remember we tried to, like, Scotty Reed has Black Talk Radio Network. That's a Black-owned radio station for us to bring our dollars together and support it. And I remember I talked to that brother like maybe a year ago and said, well, why is Ulu still on Blog Talk Radio, who are owned by Zionists, but yet, you know, here's Brother Scotty Reed has a Black Talk Radio station. So I'm in absolute agreement with you when you said example is the key. We got to basically start practicing some of the little simple concepts that we preach. And if we can't do that, then we're just spitting in the wind. And, you know, I'll take your answer off of air, but I agree. Example is the key. If I'm not living something, then I can't really, like, downgrade other people because they chose to do something else or choose to do what they want to do. If, you know, so that's where I have a problem with even media and Black Talk Radio. I hear a lot of things that sound good, but are we doing it? And, you know, and I'll take your answer off the air, brother. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, I remember that conversation because I was involved in it. And, you know, I can't run from that argument. I can't run from that logic. That's sound logic. And mm-hmm. I'll just say to the brother, we purchased. We're still going to continue that struggle. We purchased 5 or 6 kits.
Yeah.
And train people to get on that platform. And because none of us were prepared and still are not prepared right now in this stage to be a radio on-air personality and stationary, we weren't able to make it work. We tried. And we not only tried with that, we also tried with Harambe, with Brother Delaney, which is a Black-owned platform as well. But I really appreciate the brother who just called, because if we're not willing to step up and criticize and spank us when it's needed, then he's not doing his job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's on me to continue to broker for us getting on a Black-owned platform. As a matter of fact, our first platform, we actually own ourselves. Brother Tommy Bourdain created a platform for us ourselves, but we couldn't make that work. So that's our desire, and we have to go ahead and do what's necessary to make that happen, and we will. And it's just a matter of transition. And we actually are going to have to dedicate at least one person to be in the saddle with the proper equipment and the proper skills and knowledge, and to be like Oshie, to go through the lumps and bumps.
Yeah, now believe me, I have. Believe me, I have.
But the brother who called shouldn't feel anyway. You know, that's his responsibility, and I'm appreciative of the fact that he would bring that back up because it needs to be brought back up.
Ashe. 646, good afternoon.
Hold up, Ocean, to your guests. Like my brother Ralph said, in regards to separation or else, you know, we constantly talk about getting away from the white man. But the fact of the matter is, we don't want to get away from the white man unless we could bring someone along that we could act and behave towards them like the white man, if the truth be told. Because the reality is, if they really wanted to separate from the devil, they'd have been done did it a long time ago. Like I've said, and I will continue to say, why you got to bring people that's not part of your organization along? Yeah. Now, in regards to this whole situation with Hulu and the radio, like my brother just said, it's been over a year since that's been discussed, and I would assume that y'all are still on Blog Talk Radio. That's the type of honest behavior that should not be acceptable at all. It shouldn't take a year to correct something that's for the people. Now, I mean, I don't understand it myself personally, how we continuously make certain excuses when it shouldn't be no excuse. It should just be done. From the time you get off this radio, you should be on the black platform no later than 30 days, my brother. I'm just going to be honest with you about it because, you know, I'm tired of our people being in a position that the white man got to have control over our information. That's why you have us in a position now to whereas when you set up an establishment like you did in Atlanta, that it fails. And there's multiple reasons I understand why it failed. But what we have to do is correct what has happened and the reason for it failing, because I know as intelligent as you are, Elder, you know what went wrong. The question is, how do we collectively come together and fix it? Because it's getting to a point now to where as we're not gaining as many businesses as we should to sustain the community. If you notice, there are really not that many communities that black people have that they are the dominant entity in them. I can't really, I live in Harlem. I can't even tell you honestly, sir, that as black people, we control Harlem. And matter of fact,
you don't.
We never have. We've had Negroes like Charlie Rangel and the rest of the other politicians who have basically sold black people out. So, I mean, I support Hulu, you know what I mean? And, you know, I don't know if I heard you right. Are you now thinking about getting into the fish business?
No. Okay. I was just using an example.
Okay. Because whatever you do next, we got to figure out how we could be sustained. But I will say this before I let you go on with your analysis. I find it interesting, and I don't know if you're in communication, but it seems like a lot of the rappers in Atlanta are doing some pretty good things business-wise. Have you been in any discussions with them?
I don't think so. I mean, there's several of us, but the board has not. quite frankly, a lot of activities, some of which we know personally, but from a cooperative standpoint, well, to answer your question straight out, I don't think so. Not that I know of, in terms of any collaboration directly with any of them.
Well, maybe you should look into talking with them. And, you know, I think I just give you this suggestion. I think one of the things that you should look into, and I think what we right now as a people really need, is setting up some sort of distribution mechanism. I think if we could do that, I think that could move us in a much better position. I know there was this program at one time, I think called My Time. Yeah. I think that was the name of it, with a brother that was killed, you know, many years ago with the Washington's, the D.C. sniper.
Right, thing. Ken Bridges.
His name was Ken Bridges.
Ken Bridges, a very beautiful man. I knew him very well. Yes.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that's what needs to be done, because you know something? We have people like the black farmers who definitely need to be organized even better than they are to deal with, you know, our community. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I think they chase after white folks too much for me. To set up some sort of distribution, to whereas I would say maybe it could be set up in a way to work with the churches or something. But I think that's what we need is distribution, to figure out how to distribute products that could build the black community up and make it whole, that you know, we don't have to beg and look for white folks to participate in, you know. But I'll just listen, man. But I encourage you. I'm glad to see that y'all haven't decided to break up the organization because of what happened with the cafe. And I just think we can move forward. Hotep, and have a good day. You can put me on mute, OT.
All right, Brother Jay. Thank you for your comments. Appreciate you, brother. Yeah.
Hey, brother.
Yeah. You know, I promote a number of programs that are here on this, you know, and I don't ask for money. And although my partner says I should try to get something, because I do it every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I promote Ulu. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I promote We Buy Black, Africa for the Africans. I could go down the line. Habashah, Shrine of the Black Madonna, and of course, Baba Baruti and Akaban Institute. These are things that I believe in, and I believe that they definitely and deserve, truly deserve to be supported. Finding some way to give monetary or in-kind services so they can continue to flourish and grow, you know. And that's how I feel about us lifting us. You know, the fact that I know the problems that we had trying to establish the radio program, and the fact that we were trying not to burden any one person with the responsibility of being on every Thursday night. You know, it's understandable. And of course, it didn't work out because equipment, you know, we were very new at it. And believe me, I went through a lot of growing pains myself in trying to help in that process, even with my own program. Fortunately, now I haven't had any problems in quite some time, and let's hope that continues. You know, yeah. But
if I could, Oshi, you know, I appreciate the feedback and comments from everybody. everything starts with the seed, with the germ, so to speak, and if you're fortunate, you're able to grow it to the level that you desire to grow it, and so. Ulu will grow or it will die, and nothing is guaranteed. But I would say to the brothers who talked about the radio platform and other things, in the DNA of Ulu is service to our people from the standpoint of creating a global economic powerhouse. And in my spirit, it's going to happen. We've made some mistakes. We are still in mistakes. In other words, we haven't cleared ourselves of everything that would be an impediment, and you never do. You just overcome the aspects of your growth that may not be aligned. But the intent is pure, and not only is the intent pure, the intent is strong enough and clear enough that criticisms,
can be ingested and taken apart and taken and become a part of the meaningful and necessary growth that we have. But there's so many things that that needs to happen in the Black community, and ULU will not answer all of those. We only have a narrow mandate, and the mandate is to grow a cooperative economic business venture that adds to the ability of our community to have some control and dominance over the commerce of our community. And if we're successful at that, it will impact policy, it will impact the culture, the education, things that happen on the streets, things that happen wherever. And so I'm going to have to run OSHE as well.
Okay.
Just thank you for the opportunity to share.
Let me just say
this. And we'll be back on.
Sure, of course you will. We'll talk about a little wrap-up. But let me just share this right quick with We Buy Black. Mm-hmm. Because We Buy Black had a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. They no longer have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. You know, and I support We Buy Black. And I was talking with the person who was in charge of it because they're trying to get a grocery store. Because we don't have a grocery store, a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. And they were asking for a donation. I said, I'm going to try to get him to come to our conference this weekend because we need to hook up. We can, if we come together and share in the one vision, whatever it is, we can make it happen. But if you're out there by yourself and you're trying to clamor for this, that, and the other, and it's not happening, it's only because we do things individually. We don't do them in the spirit of cooperation. That's why those principles, those Kwanzaa principles, and the principles of Ma'at, we have what we need. If we follow those, we would be and can do great things. But Baba Akima, I really appreciate it. Also, to Baba Akima, I hope you can get a chance to listen Friday. I know you're going to be busy, but I have Brother Chief Igumawale from the Black Wall Street. I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma last weekend. And his brother gave a fantastic tour. It's independent. He's independent. It's not the city tour or anything like that. He's independent and had some great perspective. So that's this Friday, Brother Chief Igumawale, to talk about the destruction of Black Wall Street. What happened, what's happening since, and what's happening now. Of course, next year is the 100th anniversary of the massacre and the destruction of Black Wall Street, so you don't want to miss that. So thank you once again, Baba Akima. I'll see you in a couple of days, dear brother.
All right, brother.
All right. Peace. 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 Yes, I look forward to this Friday having Brother Chief Igumawale on to talk about Black Wall Street and, of course, our participation in it, the Black firefighters' participation in other Black organizations. What they want to do is bring those organizations to Tulsa, particularly May 31st and June 1st, the actual dates that happened in 1921 to Black Wall Street. But getting back to Us Lifting Us, our conference is this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. Brother Paul, you got anything to say before we get out of here? No? Okay.
Sorry, which is great conversation. Just to say that the patterns which we see in are worldwide, and it's down to us to make that change. And
right.
The brother was right. It is down to us to make that change, and how we're going to do it, I don't know, but it has to change.
Yes.
It really does.
I appreciate it, Paul. You're right. Brother Jay, you got anything to say before I get out of here, man?
Hey, Oshia, I'm really looking forward to Friday's show.
I am too.
I got a meeting Friday, but I hope to get out of it quick now that I know you're going to have this brother.
Well, he'll be
talking
in
about,
right. He'll be in the second half of the program. I left for him to be on.
Okay, that's even better.
Yeah, he'll
but
be on.
But also, right quick, Oshia, the conference this weekend are. the members going to be talking about regrouping and starting a new business, or are they just coming together for...
No, we're going to talk about a number of things, and there's some other board members who are whose positions are up, and we're going to be dealing with that. And of course, the main thing we're going to talk about is how do we regroup? What do we, you know, what are our moves from this point? You know, and lessons learned. The idea, just as Baba Akima stated, the idea, the ultimate goal is still to have hundreds of thousands of us involved in Ulu, supporting Ulu, having a Ulu mall or mark, not just in Atlanta. No, not everything just in the damn Atlanta. No, we're talking about not just even in the States. We may have it in the UK, on the continent. The beauty of Ulu as a cooperative is could be global. And that's what this perspective should be, you know. So
you know, brother Ochi.
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Hey, Paul. Let me ask you a quick question: are there any blacks getting the coronavirus over where you at?
Not that I know of, brother Jay. To be honest with you, not that I know of. Strange enough.
Because look, right quick, I haven't realize or anything of that nature that it doesn't hit blacks yet. Everybody that I think that's being hit with the disease may be white. So I
don't know about that. I don't know about that, Jay. I did see.
I said maybe white.
Yeah.
I did say, you know what I mean? But I haven't heard of any brothers and sisters. And like Brother Paul said, you know, over in England, one would think that, you know, what you call them, the Murugals would get it. And I hope they do, to be honest with you. Let them get it and let them get what they
deserve, huh? Okay.
Now, listen, right quick. If you notice, I gotta say one thing. You got to give the Italian people some credit.
Oh, yeah.
In the manner in which they're handling this whole
thing. Yeah, they shut the country down.
They shut it down.
They shutting it down.
You know, I got to take my hat off to them because, you know, this thing right here, I know me and a friend got into a big argument last night over this whole thing because he said it started with the Chinese eating bats. And I tried to explain to him that, you know, in certain regions in every country, people have certain delicacies. So, I mean, I don't believe that. I don't believe it just came from someone eating bat.
Well, I think
it was man-made.
Well, let me say this, because, you know, somebody pointed out the fact that coronavirus is listed on a can of Lysol. I'm quite sure that's been on there for quite a few years, if not a decade or more. The reality is, just like a lot of other viruses, they are strains. And this is a serious resistant strain of the coronavirus, just like it was for the Asian flu and Ebola and so forth. You know. And yes, we know now as a fact that the AIDS virus, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, was created in the lab in Fort Detrick, Maryland. The government appropriated the fund for a biological weapon through the armed forces. So we know these things happen. Well, I got to get out of here, man. Yep.
Hotel. I'm talking to you, Paul.
Okay, see you Wednesday. See you on Friday, Jay. See you on Friday. See you on Friday.
I will be on the house.
Okay.
Hotel.
See you on Friday, Paul. God bless you, my brother. Take care.
Yes, brother. Take care. I'll speak to you soon. Thank you.
Peace. We end this program like we're in all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, it's always an honor and a pleasure to present to you, to be on this program. I appreciate it. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters of Bibi Fahodie, Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. We will be victorious. Bibi Fahodie family, see you on Friday. Remember, it's got a great show coming up. Peace, family.